My name is Dick Barnes, and I'm visiting today with Milton Miller, a lifelong resident of the Brownsburg area and northern Rockbridge County. Today is November the 26th, 2007, and this is being recorded in Brownsburg, Virginia. As I said, we are meeting here today with Milton Miller, and Milton, I'd like to ask you, if you will, to share with us some of your family background here in the Brownsburg area.
My parents and I lived about 5 miles north of Brownsburg on 252, but I also had a grandmother that lived in Brownsburg on Hayes Creek Road, the first house on the right. My great-grandfather lived about 5 miles north of Brownsburg also. He was a cattle dealer in addition to a farmer. My first contact with Brownsburg was visiting my grandmother. And one of the first things I remember, one of my uncles had a Model T that he had to crank. And he was always smiling after he got that Model T cranked and was going home from my grandmother's. Another one of the first things I remember about Brownsburg was going to the barber shop, which is in the back of the store, the old Whipple store. And I remember some of the stories I heard in the barber shop. One of them was that Mr. Wade didn't have any heat except the cold stove. And if you went too early in the morning, it was kind of cold in the store, in the barber shop. One morning, Mr. Holland came in there and asked Mr. Wade if he could cut his hair with his overcoat on. And Mr. Wade said, "Mr. Holland, I could almost cut your hair with your hat on."
That's good.
Another story I remember from that time was that one Saturday night, my father took me to the barber shop, and there was an intoxicated man in there. And he was asking another man about hauling some straw for him. And he told the other man, said, "I told my wife when I left home tonight, I was never going to take another drop. But when we haul that straw, we'll have to get a little drink." To me, as a youngster, he could hardly stand up when he was telling that story.
Milton, who were some of your neighbors in the Brownsburg area?
Not referring to my neighbors as such, but to my grandmother's, I remember when visiting her was a Mr. Dice that lived across the street from her. And also a colored lady that lived across the alley from Mr. Dice was named Susan Porter, and her house was almost in a thicket to me as a youngster. There was Miss Pitt Beery that lived between my grandmother's house and 252, and her house is part of the present post office. I don't know why they called her Miss Pitt Beery. She was married, but her husband, I think, was pretty rough on her at times, and she had a peg leg. And then there was Mr. Harvey Matheny that had a little house on wheels that had been a VDOT, a tool house at one time. And it sat across the alley from Mr. Dice's garage. Mr. Matheny worked in leather. He repaired shoes and made harness and bridles and things for horses. Mr. Charlie Dice, Mr. Walter Dice's brother, lived down on Fairfield Road, and he always carried a big stick for a walking stick. But some people said that him and Miss Matheny had had problems the reason he carried the stick. You weren't.
Milton, if you will, share with us some of your relatives, the names of some of your relatives that lived in the Brownsburg area.
As I had said before, my grandmother lived in Brownsburg, and my mother had lived there for a short time before her marriage. My mother was born and raised on the Moore Place, which is now the Sturt Farm on Fairfield Road. Mr. Dice, I was talking about, lived across the street from my grandmother. He had originally lived on a farm in Dutch Hollow area of Brockbridge County. And one of the stories about the Dices when they lived on the farm was that they had a colored employee who was very strong. In fact, the story went that he pitched bales of hay with a pitchfork. But I asked Mr. Charlie Dice one time about that story, and he said, oh no, said that he was strong, but he never pitched bales of hay with a pitchfork. And of course, my father's family had lived north of Brownsburg, about 5 miles, for four generations before me. And as I said, my uncle had had the Model T that he was always glad to get started by cranking, lived on Walker's Creek.
Milton, did you attend school in Brownsburg?
Yes, that was the only school that I attended. Miss Trimmer was our principal, and she ruled with an iron fist. In fact, I've made the statement that if she was principal today, she'd probably murder half the kids going to school. As I remember, when I was in the very low grades, school wasn't called off too often because of the weather. In fact, the state didn't put chemicals on the roads or scrape them very good, and the snow came packed, but we still went to school. On some days, the teachers out of the area could not get there, and so we in the first and second grade would be kept by Mrs. Rosanell Patterson, who usually taught the freshmen in high school. And one of the things she would do when she was keeping us small kids was go around and pat the ones on the head that she had taught their parents. And when she got to me, she patted me on the head twice. Some of the stories that she would tell us during these days was about the Civil War and how it had affected Brownsburg. One of the stories was that the Withrows, who lived in the first house south of the bridge, had a fine carriage and fine horses. So when they heard that the Union Army was coming through, they sent the horses and carriage around back of Brownsburg to hide them from the Union soldiers. But the soldiers happened to be coming from Walker's Creek and met the horses and carriage. They gave the colored boy the option of coming back once they took him to Lexington. But they cut the horses from the carriage and took them with them. Another story that she told was that down on Hayes Creek Road, someone was saw the Union soldiers coming and hid behind a rail fence. Well, when the Union soldiers got to that meadow they decided to hang a prisoner that they had with them. And they hung this prisoner from a tree there, and this person laying behind the rail fence watching. The story is that up the valley somewhere, the soldiers had wanted to go to in a house. And the owner said, "You can go in my house all except one room. My daughter's in there sick." So the soldiers went in the house and honored his request. But after they left, one of the soldiers got curious. He was going back and see what was in that room. So when the homeowner caught him in his house, he had an axe in his hand, and he killed the soldier. And he made the mistake of getting a colored person to help him to take the body out and bury it. And the colored person reported him. So that was the man that had hung in the middle there. The soldiers had gotten him and brought him down there, and I guess they decided that that was a good time to get rid of him. There's another story that I heard about the Civil War that I only heard once, and it did not come from Ms. Patterson, but one of the walkers from Walker's Creek was in the Stanton area. And why, I was never told, but the Union soldiers started running him. And he had a horse that he could go around a turn and wait on Union soldiers to come in sight, and he'd fire on them. And that horse would turn and run, and he could outrun the Union soldiers. And this happened on the turns coming from Stanton to Newport. When the Union soldiers got to Newport, they wanted to know where that man on that horse went. They didn't care about the man, but they sure would like to have that horse. When I was a youngster going to school, we had to milk cows as well as beef cows. We had sheep, hogs, and draft horses. I milked cows before I was big enough to carry a full bucket of milk. And sheep were prone to give up if they got ill. They very seldom ever got well once one was ill. But these are some of the tasks that I had to do in the mornings before going to school, and in the evenings after school, was to look after these animals. After I graduated from Brownsburg High School, I did not go to college, but I got my bounded education in the Air Force. I spent over 8 years in the Air Force, and that was my higher education. After my tour in the Air Force of over 8 years, I returned to the farm in Rockbridge County and have farmed since then.
Milton, in that you returned to the farm, when did mechanization first come to the farm in northern Rockbridge County, or your farm in particular?
Well, after World War II, tractors started replacing horses, and in the late 40s, pickup balers replaced handling loose hay. And soon after, corn pickers replaced cutting and shocking corn by hand. This also was a time when there was plenty of labor went out on the farm, as the mechanization replaced labor by people and horses on the farm. The labor also became almost non-existent as far as hiring was concerned. By the mid-50s, combines replaced binders and threshers for small grains. With the disappearance of the threshers, the big midday meals disappeared also. Maybe 15 or 20 people were needed to thrash, and they were provided a meal at the midday. My generation is probably the last that knows how to harness and work a horse. When I had to get the horses under the harness and slide it over onto them because I was too little to lift the harness, I started plowing all day when I was 10 years old. You either did it with horses or with manpower before mechanization. In the winter, the horses had to be fed and watered and bathed every day. Draft horses ate a lot of the corn and the hay crop, but they usually performed very well.
Milton, have you ever attended any of the area churches?
Yes, I was born into what is now referred to as a Reformed church, but my family started attending New Providence when I was a couple years old. Dr. McLaughlin had left New Providence, but I remember him coming with Briar Hills during the summer. He and his family have had a long association with New Providence. I remember reciting the child's catechism one Sunday morning during Sunday school as the teacher stayed late so I could finish. She was Ms. Williams. At one time at least, some of us children rode in the truck to church, in the trunk of the car to church, as we had relatives visiting during the summer. New Providence was almost a one church community when I was growing up, and no one questioned why you were a Christian or a Presbyterian. That all changed when I went in service.
When did you and your family first own an automobile?
My family had autos before my time, but I remember going to Spotswood with my father with horses and wagon to get fertilizer two trips in one day. We also went to the mill sometimes in a wagon and to take broom corn to be made into brooms and take cane to make molasses. My father rode buggy to Brownsburg School. I guess it's for a short period of time. One time, some man ran a bus from near Spotswood by Wade's Mill through Brownsburg and to Stanton on Saturdays. As far as publications are concerned, my family subscribed to newspapers and we listened to the radio. My first memories of radio was listening to Wheeling, West Virginia on Saturday nights. I don't know why, unless that station was the only one that had power enough to reach us.
What individuals stand out in your memory from growing up in or living in the Brownsburg area?
Dr. McLaughlin, as I said, was not a minister at New Providence in my time, but from hearing stories, he seemed to have had a lot of influence on people, not only spiritually, but also for their total welfare as far as economics and things were concerned.
Milton, if you lived during in the Brownsburg area during the Depression years, describe life during that time as well as the life in this area during World War II?
Well, let me say first, money was extremely hard to obtain, as very few people had any surplus. There were taxes and mortgages to pay with the small amount available. I don't know how we survived. Children didn't have allowances or were paid for doing work. Most labor was traded. When I was in high school, I had an opportunity to plow 2 days for 50 cents a day for myself. My father was paid $2 for the team of horses a day. Rationing didn't affect farm families as much because we raised our own meat, and sometimes we could trade some city people meat for their sugar stamps. I was given a pig by a friend of my uncle, and she had 2 pigs the first time, and I sold them for $10 and bought my first suit of clothes. The second time she had 5 pigs, and I got $22.50 for those pigs and bought 2 calves. That's how I got started in raising animals.
What changes have you seen take place in the Brownsburg area during the time that you've lived here?
Well, my family had a phone before my time, so that wasn't a change to take place. But the biggest change I've seen is all the residential development taking place, swallowing up farms. The farms that remain need to grow to be profitable and with less labor. Most of the roads have changed that since my time. My time, there was only 11 and 252 paved, and most all the others were gravel roads.
Milton, what businesses existed in the Brownsburg area when you were growing up, and tell us how they affected you or your family?
I've been told that Mr. D.D. Woody, who later founded Woody Chevrolet, ran a store on the southwest corner of Hayes Creek Road. Then Mr. Engelman had this store there, which was then ran by Douglas and Fred Whipple. After them, Rockbridge Co-op had a store there. All this time, Mr. Supanger had a store on the northeast corner with a barber shop in the rear. Across the street from the bank, Mr. Huffman had a store. The post office was ran by the Bossers in a building south of the bank. Of course, Carwell's Lodge was past the store on Hayes Creek Road. And there was a blacksmith shop on the south end of Brownsburg. My father took me to the bank to open an account. Not because I had money, I don't think, but it was more or less a ritual for him. And I suspect Ms. Heffelfinger told most new customers this story. But the story she told me was that her uncle came into the bank one day and she told him he had overdrawn his account. His reply was that he would just write her a check to cover it. That's number two.
What stands out in your memory as the most significant or important event that occurred in the Brownsburg area during the time that you've lived here?
To me, the flood of 69 was the greatest thing that's really happened in this area. It was so devastating.
Milton, if you will, please share with us any stories, humorous or otherwise, that you have heard or were involved in during your time that you've lived in the Brownsburg area.
Well, one of the stories I guess I'll never forget gave me, I guess, the first lesson in life. That's what other people may have done at times. One day, when the snow was packed on the road and pushed up on the side, so it's quite a bit of snow on the ground, I rode my bicycle to school. I'm not sure why I rode it that day. But after school, when I was coming down through Brownsburg on my bicycle, two boys came out of one of the stores. And as youth would do, I'd rode my bicycle along, and they walked along with me. When we got out almost to Rocky Lane, here came the store owner and said to one of the boys, "Give me that pack of cigarettes you took." My first reaction was, "You're crazy, man. No one would take a pack of cigarettes from a store." And the boy reached in his hip pocket and pulled out a pack of cigarettes. To me, this was a shock. Another story that I remember was, there were stories of people who had money, and some kept it at home. And I suspect if you didn't have a debt and a small amount of money, by today's standards, you were considered as having money. We had a neighbor who passed away, and they were selling her farm in Brownsburg one Saturday afternoon. As a small child, I looked up and saw her nephew coming up our driveway with two paper bags, one in each hand. My first reaction was, here he is coming with money to get my father to take him to buy his aunt's farm. As it turned out, he was returning flour that my mother had used to make bread for him while the lady was sick.
If you would like, share with us any of the history or events of your family.
My mother's father and his family lived on what is now Sturt Farm. He had an uncle, I've heard my mother say, that lived up on Montebello Mountain. He would drive his buggy to Vesuvius and then ride his horse up on the mountain to visit his uncle because of the rough and steepness of the mountain. On my father's side, he had an uncle who lived on the other side of Montebello Mountain. And I've heard one of my uncles say that he and his father went over there to visit, and they got off the horse and led the horse up the mountain because it was so steep and rugged. As I said earlier, my father's side of the family, I had a great-great-grandfather that lived 5 miles north of Brownsburg on land I now own. My grandfather lived where I lived before moving to Bellevue. He is the one that Dr. Walker stabbed to death in the old school building. He also served in the Civil War.